At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and this is where we explore the conversations that matter most to our well-being. The conversations that touch not just our minds, but our hearts. Today's episode feels especially meaningful. We're exploring the theme of the power of acceptance, not as giving up, but as a conscious, courageous act that allows us to live more fully. Acceptance isn't about pretending everything's okay or forcing ourselves to be positive. It's about making space for all of it, the joy, the pain, the messiness, and the beauty of being human. I'm truly honored to welcome Bharti Dheer today. Bharti is an inspiring author, speaker, and a social worker whose remarkable story has touched people across the world. Her memoir, Worth, by Hay House Publishers, tells the journey of being abandoned as a baby in Uganda, adopted by an Indian family facing racism, rejection, and identity struggles, and ultimately finding her own sense of belonging and worth. Bharti's story reminds us that acceptance is not just about accepting ourselves, but also the experiences life brings us, even the ones we never asked for or never imagined we'll face. Bharti, welcome to the show. Please tell us a little more about yourself and what led you to share your story in Worth.
Hi, Belinda. Thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. And I'm very honored to be here and to be talking to you today. The reason why I wrote Worth was because I am an adoptive mother myself, and having gone through the struggles that I did, and recognizing similar struggles in my child who is adopted, I felt it was really important for her to have a message that it doesn't matter what struggles or experiences you have, but you can get through those experiences. And I just wanted to empower her, and I wanted her to understand her worth in the world today and within the family, and and just to start appreciating and accepting her circumstances. So it's in my book that her circumstances a little bit similar to mine, in that she was abandoned as well, and then adopted by me subsequently. And so, of course, my child was going through very similar struggles that I had, like, why was I abandoned on the roadside in Uganda? Why was I left? What was it about me that made my birth mother and potentially my birth father leave me on the roadside? And so, as I saw my child beginning to question her sense of worth, her sense of acceptance in this society, because obviously she was also questioning her identity in being adopted into an Indian family, like I used to when I was a teenager. So I just wanted her to really accept that she's a valued person in this society, and in the family, and she's very much loved. And I wanted her to feel not just empowered, but really to have that deep sense of acceptance about her identity in the world that we navigate today. So that's the reason why I wrote Worth.
Thank you for sharing that. It's so moving that you've drawn on your own experiences there to help your daughter feel seen and understood, and your ability to connect with her on that level and guide her toward acceptance is truly powerful. Thank you, Bharti. What I love about your story is that it shows how acceptance is something we build slowly over time. It's not a switch we flip, it's a journey we walk through, and sometimes one hard step at a time. I've come to understand in my own life experience that acceptance takes time, sometimes a lifetime, and it isn't just about embracing the good, it's about making peace with the disappointments, the losses, the what ifs, things like never becoming a mother for me, which took me many years to truly accept. But I did, not because it was forced, but because I became aware of my purpose, what I needed to learn and give back. And so I'd love to begin by hearing what acceptance means to you. Bharti, what does acceptance actually mean to you personally, and how did it shape your journey?
Well, I think, Belinda, acceptance for me starts with self. It starts with me. For a long time, and I've written about it in Worth, I saw myself in the eyes of the Asian and white ideas of beauty and worth. And I always found myself wanting. And in one sense, I lost my identity because I was so busy rejecting myself, my looks, who I was, you know, my history of being adopted, I just questioned everything about me. And there came a time when I realized that, you know, I have to accept myself, because nobody can accept, give me that sense of acceptance unless I start believing in myself and believing that I have a right to be here and that believing that I have a right to live. And as you said, Belinda, it didn't just happen with a flick of a switch. I had to start by affirmations of acceptance to myself. Even though I didn't believe in those affirmations initially, I had to say to myself, I have a right to be here. I am worthy and I am beautiful in my own right. And I had to keep reminding myself like that every single day. And I will tell you, Belinda, that it took me quite a few months before I actually started believing those affirmations. And so acceptance for me started with self-acceptance. It's so important, because if, you know, people can tell you that they love you, that they care about you,
yes,
they don't care who, you know, what you are, whether you're dual heritage, whether you've got a skin problem, whether you've got this particular condition, lupus, whatever it is, people around you will reassure you and tell you that they love you and care about you nonetheless. But until you start with self-acceptance, you cannot move forward. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And that's incredibly powerful, Bharti. Thank you for speaking so openly from the heart. What really stands out is your insight that no one else can give us that acceptance we withhold from ourselves. It has to start within. It just has to. We have to become self-aware to self-accept the good, the bad, the ugly aspects of ourselves, no matter what our circumstances. And you're right, it's not an overnight change. It's a gradual process, sometimes just repeating those affirmations until they slowly take root. And your journey is such a meaningful reminder that self-acceptance is an act of courage and commitment. And what stands out to me most is that it's often the hardest thing in life that become the places where we grow up the most. And yet in the moment, it can feel so overwhelming. In Worth, you share so openly about rejection and identity, where you're originally from and all those things where you didn't feel accepted. How did acceptance help you process those experiences?
So one of the things about self-acceptance is that realization that you cannot change your past and you cannot change your circumstances that you were born into. So one of the things that I learned was just learning to accept my experiences and to understand that they've given me a strength and resilience that I've survived. I'm a survivor of these negative experiences. But also, I think I had to learn to just understand the power that comes with forgiveness and forgiving the others. That doesn't mean being a doormat and letting people walk all over you and accepting the abuse that you may have gone through. It just means saying to somebody, you know, recognizing that the people who are negative towards you, they have their own issues. They have their own problems. They are probably wanting in areas of their lives. And the only reason why they felt empowered to be rejecting or abusive towards me was because of their own lack of awareness, their own lack of worth. So I had to learn to forgive. I had to learn that acceptance comes with a willingness to forgive and to move on from those people, to cut those cords of negativity that sometimes keep us chained to, you know, those negative feelings that we have in ourselves. And I needed to break free of those chains and say, you know what, I need to stride out now and just walk forward and forgive those that had impacted on my sense of worth and my sense of acceptance. And I think that's what I learned, Belinda, from that experience.
And what you're sharing really speaks to how acceptance helps us reclaim the parts of our story that felt broken or abandoned and bring them back into the wholeness of who we are. That's such an important point. Thank you for sharing that, Bharathi, because acceptance isn't passive, is it? It doesn't mean we silence ourselves or tolerate what's harmful. It's about knowing what we can release and what we still need to stand up for. So how did your relationship with your adoptive family shape your understanding of belonging and worth?
I think my adoptive family were and are extremely accepting of me and my circumstance. Obviously, when my parents adopted me, I was found on the roadside. I was 2 to 3 days old. The local newspaper and radio said it was an Asian child that had been placed on the roadside. But, you know, the remarkable thing, Belinda, is that my mum told me a story much, much later on when I was a teenager, that she actually dreamt about having me. So she was pregnant with my sister, who was born in November of the same year, 1960. and I was born in September, but she was pregnant, and she said that she kept having the dreams where she was being told that she was going to have another girl. And she told my father these dreams, and he was a typical male, very dismissive, said that she was probably carrying a baby girl, and that was it. But remarkably, as the time of my birth came nearer and nearer, the dreams became more intense, to the point where she was actually shown in the dream the hospital where I'd be found, the room, the ward, Ward 21, that is etched in my memory forever, I think, that I would be in Ward 21. I'd be in a cot. I'd be wrapped up in a dirty pink blanket. So she had a real vision of that. And when I was born, my dad was reading the newspaper, and my mum, who could not read, he explained to him, the baby's here, the baby's here. And you know, she managed to persuade him to take him to the hospital. So what that does for acceptance, Belinda, is it's such a powerful message of acceptance. And I would, I mean, I was a bit skeptical initially, but I don't know, my mom was so insistent about these dreams, and other people in the community who were my mom's friends confirmed what she said to me. And, you know, that does, that really moved me and touched me about how her willingness to accept me, and even accept me after she realized that I was actually not Asian, but I was dual heritage. I was African Asian. And my parents did not waver from their commitment to having me in their lives. And there were other Asian families that had come forward. And, you know, my mum was told, oh, you're pregnant, maybe let's give the other Asian families a chance. But this, the weirdness of it all was that it was meant to be, because the other Asian families, as soon as they found out I was part African, they all sort of melted away. They didn't want to know me. And it was only my mum and dad left in the end saying, we still want this child and we're going to have her. So that's how I ended up being adopted and being accepted. And that was very, very powerful. And, you know, and when I was in school, in primary school, loads of children used to come up to me and say, that's not your real family. And I remember my sisters and my brothers, my younger brother wasn't born then, actually fighting with children saying, no, she is our sister. Because none of us knew that I was actually adopted. My parents had always said that I was one of them. And my dad used to joke, you look like me. And my mum used to make a joke to the others, oh, you look like me. So there was no reason for me to even question that I looked different. It didn't even occur to me that I looked different. I had curly hair. I had darker skin. But my dad was quite dark in his colouring. So I just fully accepted that I was part of the family. And it's only later on that I realised the extent of my adoptive family's acceptance of me. And, you know, my parents were shunned by some members of the family, extended family, who said, you're adopting this heart, part African, part Asian girl. Well, yeah. They didn't even say Asian, they just said African. Mm-hmm. And my parents still continued to commit to having me. And I think that's a huge...
It is. That's truly an incredible and moving story, isn't it? And it speaks to the deep intuition and connection that you had with your parents, and especially your mum, even before you came into her life. The detail about Ward 21 is especially striking. No wonder it's etched in your memory. It's as if you were meant to be found and loved by her all along. And thank you for sharing something so personal and profound Bardi, thank you for sharing so many rich and heartfelt reflections so far. We'll continue this beautiful conversation in just a moment, but first, let's take a short break for a word from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm here with the remarkable Bardi Dheer, author of Worth. Before the break, Bardi shared such powerful insights into acceptance, identity, and the journey towards embracing ourselves fully. Let's continue this deep and uplifting conversation. Welcome back, Bardi. And you were explaining how your family, your relationship with your adoptive family, shaped your understanding of belonging and worth. And family can teach us both love and struggle. And sometimes it's the tension between those things that shapes how we see ourselves. Was there a turning point when you realized you needed to accept yourself for your own well-being? I know you said that although you didn't feel that difference so much, but was there a turning point ever growing up in a different environment with a household where, although your adoptive family accepted you, but maybe perhaps other people in the community, you struggled with them, and that's where the questions were asked to yourself?
Yes, Belinda. So I think the turning point for me was not so much about the community, but I think it was an accumulation of all the sort of memories and the experiences I'd had, you know, where I had become aware of my adoption. I became aware of my adoption at age 8 when I sneaked into my dad's study and I saw a file with my name on it. We were not allowed in the study as children, and I went in there because I was an avid reader and I really wanted to find a book to read. And I knew my father had a collection of books, and then I happened to come across this file with my name on it, and I was curious, so I opened it and found out I was adopted. And of course that really stunned me, but frightened me as well, because I knew that I could not tell my parents what I knew about being adopted, because the study was very strictly forbidden and I would have been beaten if my father had found out I'd gone in there. So the only person I told about being adopted was my sister, who just shrugged it off and just accepted and said, "You're still my sister, it doesn't matter." But we both agreed that we needed to keep it a secret. And then we, you know, as you said much earlier on, Belinda, there were the issues about racism, about colorism, about sexism, all those sort of questions, and my growing awareness of those issues. And then, you know, having a skin condition called EB, which is epidermolysis bullosa. I was diagnosed with that when I was 8, and then lupus. So at, you know, age 16, I was, those accumulation of those experiences really made me question myself and question why I even wanted to live. So the turning point came for me actually at university. Mm-hmm. I had been bullied in school, and there was some degree of bullying in university as well. And I remember feeling really sorry for myself and actually thinking, I want to die. I don't want to be in this world anymore. I was laying in my bed, I was crying, and I was saying, you know, I really want to commit suicide. I do not want to be here on this earth anymore. And I had the strangest experience. I think it was a dream, or it might have been maybe my guardian angel, if you believe in guardian angels. But I felt a presence in my room, and it was a very firm but gentle presence. And it just said, I heard very clearly, look, you know, you're here for a purpose. You are not here to die. And you're not, you know, you now have to decide whether you're going to hide yourself away in a room, kill yourself, shut yourself away from the world completely, or you're going to accept that you've come here for a purpose and you're going to live. You're going to go out and you're going to look at the world in its face. You're going to stand up tall, be straight, and just start living your life and start believing that you have got a purpose in this life. And that was the turning point for me. You know, the presence left and I thought, you know what? What do I want to do? And I thought of my mum and the sacrifices she'd made. I thought of my brothers and my sisters. And I thought, I can't, you know, my mum was a widow then. And I thought, I can't kill myself. And I didn't know what my purpose was. I really did not know what my purpose was. But I just felt that real powerful connection to the words that had been spoken to me, whether it was a dream or whether it was an actual presence, I do not know. But I just felt a real uplifting inside my heart. And I felt, you know, I can't do it. I'm not going to kill myself. No, you're right. You know, I need to go out there. But it took time. It started with those affirmations that we talked about earlier.
Yes.
But it that was my turning point, Belinda.
And thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing such intimate details about your life and your experiences. I'm sure there's a lot of people and a lot of listeners that can resonate with those thoughts, because it's those moments that we feel stuck, those moments when we're feeling ourselves spiraling into a depression or stress or anxiety, that we struggle. And when we have an awakening or an experience, as you described, whether it was a presence or whatever it must have been, it's there to guide you. Your higher self or your inner being is there to guide you. So those moments arrive quietly, don't they? They arrive quietly, but they arrive with impact. And sometimes we realize we're simply tired of fighting ourselves, and you probably reach that moment at that time, but there's something inside of us that softens and we start having that self-empathy. We start realizing, no, there is something bigger that we're supposed to achieve and do. And it comes from that essence of intuition, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If we just change the direction a little of the conversation, how did your cultural background influence your understanding of acceptance? I mean, I know we're talking about here you are in Uganda, then you're being brought up by an Indian family, and then you're transferred to a different country altogether, and you have to then transition your inner self to the idea of, yes, I am a part of this family, but I'm actually adopted. You've had to keep that a secret. And on top of that, you're in a new environment. Again, you're at university, you're in this British culture. What was it like for you? How did your cultural background influence your understanding?
That's a really good question, actually, because it's something that I've sort of grappled with. And as I said, my sense of identity was very much skewed by my cultural upbringing and the community I was brought up in. So the community I was brought up in was very much about looks, you know. Asians very much into fairness as being beautiful and dark being not beautiful. So, as I said, you know, the cultural upbringing, they were, you know, just growing up knowing that there were people who found me wanting because of my colour and because of my looks. You know, there was a time when I was told, oh, straighten your hair, you will look more South Asian and, you know, you'll be more accepted in society. And, you know, having to put powder on my face to make myself look whiter, you know, or fairer, you know, those are the sort of things that I went through. The cultural, how I ended up explaining myself and still do, is that I say to people, racially, I am part African and part Asian. Yeah. And I consider myself to be a very strong Black woman politically. But culturally, I am Indian. Culturally, my religion is Sikh. My food is very much, my diet is very much the Asian food. Although, yes, we do eat English food as well and other foods, because coming to this country, you learn other types of foods as well. So, yeah, we do. But generally, I would say, you know, I was brought up eating Indian food and I cook Indian food by large. So culturally, religion-wise, values-wise, well, not so much values, I think that's the wrong thing to say. you know, religion-wise and in terms of diet, in terms of dress, I will wear the salwar kameez sometimes. Sometimes I wear a sari, sometimes I wear a lehenga. You know, culturally, I'm Indian. But racially, I am African, and politically, I'm a Black woman through and through. Does that make sense?
It definitely does, because culture can be both a comfort and a challenge. Yeah. And I myself have experienced Asians often associate fairness with beauty, while darker skin is often seen as less beautiful. And I understand that completely. And it is a challenge when those things come up, and I know you've had to deal with that colorism a lot, and it can give us that less sense of belonging. You're always trying to prove yourself, you're always trying to fit in, especially at such a young age and being so vulnerable at that age, especially after discovering. And you said you were 8 years old when you discovered you were adopted. And again, you're questioning yourself constantly, aren't you? But yeah. It can also place expectations on us that are hard to reconcile when we're dealing with things like racism and colorism from people that we're trying to fit in with. When everyone in our own family has accepted us, we start questioning as a child, well, we're not fitting in with anyone else, and we're constantly trying to find ourselves, and it's not easy. And I love to hear how you navigated that. What role did forgiveness play in your journey?
I think, Belinda, you know, first thing I want to say is, let's just go back to the issue of belonging. And I think, you know, in our Asian community, even if you're a birth child, you can find difficulty in belonging. I just wanted to say that.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you know, for a lot of families, there is so much emphasis on girls being a burden. And, you know, the birth of a female child can be so disappointing for families, and it can bring up all sorts of issues of rejection for the girls. So a lot of the girls I know who are birth, you don't have to be adopted, who are birth children, have talked about not belonging because they've grown up with messages of hearing you're a girl, you're a burden. You know, wish we'd had a boy. Boys are more important. Boys carry the lineage. Boys don't, we don't have to worry about dowries and things like that. So that's the message I've got from girls generally after my book was published, but also growing up. So I think that sense of belonging can, from a cultural perspective, can affect all of us in different ways.
You're absolutely right. Many Asian communities, even birth daughters, can experience such painful sense of not belonging. Thank you for sharing so far. We'll continue this beautiful conversation in just a moment, but first, let's take a short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm here with the remarkable Bharti Dare, author of Worth. Bharti, to continue the conversation, that's really fascinating that you address many Asian communities that experience these painful sense of not belonging simply because of the deep-rooted cultural preference of forced sons. And it's interesting, a lot of your readers have brought this up with you, but that sense of rejection can leave lasting emotional scars, shaping a girl's self-esteem and sense of worth well into adulthood. And we're talking about, if that is the case, how can we actually move on from those thoughts and forgive those experiences? How does it play a role in your journey?
I think the important thing that I learned was some experiences are so painful that it's very hard to forgive. But for your own sense of belonging and for your own sense of worth, it's really important to speak up. It's really important to speak up about the injustices of those experiences and to reclaim your worth by campaigning and raising awareness of those issues. And I personally believe that one of the purposes of my memoir is about raising awareness. The overall message from Worth is saying to people, think about your prejudices, think about the impact of your words, think about the impact of your behavior, think about the impact of your actions on a child's sense of worth. And as you said, Belinda, very rightly, some people carry those negative messages and may never recover emotionally or mentally from those messages. So it's navigating that whole cultural minefield of prejudices in their different forms, whether it's your own community or from outside the community. I think it's really important for us to empower ourselves and the people around us to be able to speak up against those prejudices and to raise awareness of those prejudices. So that is, I think, one key way of navigating that whole cultural expectation that is so unjust for some of us in terms of the messages that we get.
And your message in Worth carries real power, asking people to pause and reflect on how their words and actions can shape a child's self-esteem is profound and much needed. And I know when we become less rigid with ourselves. It naturally softens how we show up with others. And our relationship often mirror our relationships with ourselves. What tools or practices helped you develop more self-compassion over time, apart from just the affirmations that you shared earlier? What other tools can you give to our listeners to help them?
I think it's the affirmations are very important and helpful. I think the other tools that I would say is, again, you know, the second tool is about speaking up and being aware and actually challenging stereotypes and prejudices. That's the second tool. The third tool is just starting to accept who I am. Accept that I may not be able to change everything around me, but just celebrating that I have a right to be on this earth. So that's not just affirmations, but that comes from self-belief. And also understanding that every negative experience is not a permanent experience. I think that's really important for mental health, you know, and understanding that, you know, sometimes when we are caught up in the throes of depression or the throes of negative thoughts, we think this experience is going to last forever. But no, this experience is just temporary. And just try and hold on to the fact that this is not a permanent experience. There will be light at the end of that tunnel. The other thing is just drawing on friendships and the support network around you.
Absolutely.
Draw on the strength they give you. You know, my strength came from my family, but also friends who accepted me, you know, and I drew on those. I didn't get drawn to the people who were negative. I drew on the people I knew who were accepting me and would give me strength and would accept, you know, love me for who I was. So draw on them, even if it's just one person or two people, go and draw on them and ask them and talk to them about your experiences. And if they really love you and understand you, they will help you try and navigate some of those issues that are affecting you. So those are the sort of tips I would give.
That's such a thoughtful and uplifting perspective. You're absolutely right. When we're caught in the grip of negative thoughts, it can feel endless. But reminding ourselves that it's temporary is powerful. And reaching out to friends and our support system can make all the difference. Bharathi, thank you so much for joining me today. Your honesty, depth, and warmth have been such a gift. I know your story will resonate with so many, and I hope our listeners carry your words with them long after today. Bharathi, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me on Instagram on www.bharathidear.com. Also, I'm on Facebook, all the social media outlets, but also my book is available in Amazon, Waterstones, and all leading bookstores, both here and in the USA. And Belinda, I just want to finish by saying thank you so much for this opportunity and for just giving me the honor of being able to talk to you, not just about myself, but I hope that my message of worth reaches, you know, many, many people, and everybody realizes that we're all worthy to be here. And thank you again.
No, thank you for sharing this. It's a message so many people need to hear. To all of you tuning in, thank you for joining us on the Healthy Debate Show. I'm Belinda Walia, and I hope today's conversation leaves you with a little more courage to meet yourself with kindness, a little more space to embrace the beautiful, messy, complex parts of life, and a reminder that you are enough, just as you are. This is the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio, where your well-being matters most. To close today's show, I want to leave you with a song that perfectly captures this message. There's nothing worth the change. This is The Way You Are by the Lighthouse Family.
People always try to take you for a ride. Ain't no big surprise. Ain't no cause to cry. I know that you'll get by if you're strong in your own mind.